for them time.
Once again, Jamaicans are listening, watching YouTube. YouTube is hands down the biggest streaming platform in the world and also the biggest streaming platform right here in Jamaica.
But World Music Views is a media entity. It's a trade publication that documents what's happening in music, particularly reggae, dancehall music, right here from Jamaica and elsewhere in the Caribbean.
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you for that work. Yep. Great work. Congrats.
Yes, this is Igor Katz, Ineffable Music Group, and you guys are watching World Music Views.
Hey.
Hey, Igor Katz.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Welcome to World Music Views, my brother.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I was doing a list of top independent record labels focused on reggae, and your name popped up. And I was like, this is somebody I need to talk to, because for years, BP Records has been the leading independent record label, and you're popping up. I've talked to Adam, who is the vice president of Ineffable, before, but I figured I need to talk to someone at the top. So after you, I want to talk with Cousins. but hopefully I could get from you what has been happening on the California front of reggae and your plans. But before we do that, let's reverse. Just introduce yourself, tell me your name and how you got your present job.
Thank you. Well, first and foremost, thank you for having us, man. Thank you for making the list. Thank you for spending all this time. I'm Igor Katz, Ineffable Music Group. When we was in college at UC Santa Cruz, Thomas and I were matched up as roommates. We didn't know each other. Whatever we filled out on our college applications, they matched us up. And, you know, that's how Ineffable started. You know, and again, I know on the sports side, you know, whenever you make a list or anything like that, a lot of people are like, oh, what's going on? What is this? But the reality is, you know, it shines a lot of light, and, you know, we're really appreciative that you know, consider us on that list. Everybody on that list is amazing. Many people are not on that list, but the point is it sparks some conversation, which, you know, which is great. And if we weren't talking to you about this right now, we talk to each other about it. Like, you know, we're fully into it. So we're greatly appreciative of it. And we've been following you guys way before you made the list, because you're one of the few people that shine light, you know, on a lot of things that are going on all over the world, not just in one particular area. So we're, you know, again, fans of yours, and, you know, and greatly appreciative of that.
Thank you. Thank you so much, man. Thank you. Respect. So how did you get into the music business? Like, when did you start?
So it started in college for us, in Santa Cruz. You know, we were working with some of the local artists and trying to manage them and things like that. And we're having some trouble getting shows for them. Just obviously not knowing how anything works. And we decided to throw our own events. And through that, we began to kind of, you know, put on our own events, concerts and things of that nature, moving into the kind of talent buying side of things, as talent buyers and as promoters, and kind of through that develop relationships with artists, and, you know, kind of spiraled into, you know, to where we are currently. Considered going to law school at one point, and you know, me and Thomas sat at the end of our college careers and we're like, you know what, I think we're going to do this instead, just because it was clear to us that this is what we love. You know, many people thought we were a little bit crazy, and we were and still are. But if you pursue what you love and you really, you know, are dedicated to it, you can make it happen. And luckily we were able to do that and make a career out of it.
So you and Thomas met in college?
We met in college.
So that's a different gameplay for reggae music, right? Because reggae is street. The majority of people in reggae music never went to college. Is street culture, is street music. How important do you think it is for people at the business end of the music, and also the artists, to be educated on the music business in order for success to come?
Well, I mean, it's imperative to be educated on the music business side of things, but college isn't like where that happened for us, right? We didn't study music business in college. And I think that the idea, you know, especially on our end, initially, you know, most of the people that we were working with were rappers, gangster rappers, because they were the only ones that would kind of be responsive to like, hey, let's do these events, let's do these shows. And it wasn't necessarily an intentional kind of thing of like, we're just going to work on reggae or anything like that. And I think in terms of your question, our experience of doing things the wrong way, I think, you know, helps shape our understanding of how to do things the right way. And one of the things that we say, you know, within Ineffable is that there's many different ways to go about the music industry, many different strategies, right? Like you take 10 different managers or 10 different people, they'll probably have 10 different things that they'll tell you, but there's definitely a cohesive wrong way about doing stuff, right? And being fully transparent, a lot of things we did in terms of learning was by doing and failing and, you know, and learning. And that doesn't necessarily require going to any school or anything like that. It just requires getting out there and trying. So I do think it's completely imperative to, you know, to be knowledgeable within the music business, but I do not think it requires going to university of any kind, because it changes so fast that by the time you, you know, you're picking up any real information at one of these schools, it's almost irrelevant to what's actually going on. And a lot of the stuff that we do on our end, you know, you probably see Adam doing some of this stuff, is, you know, we'll do Zooms and talks, you know, at some of these music business programs to kind of give them more of an update on what's actually happening. And, you know, to make sure that everybody's staying relevant by learning, right? By just continuing to learn. And just like we expect our artists to continue to get better, right? They expect us to also continue to learn and understand what kind of new royalties are out there and just, you know, different ways to monetize and just whatever else is happening, so that way we can remain relevant. Because once you stop learning, you know, you fall back super fast. And, you know, if you rely on kind of things that were happening, let's say even a couple of years ago, even a couple of months ago, a lot of that stuff doesn't necessarily apply, whether it be the social media platforms and the algorithms that are out there. The two kind of things that, you know, that are somewhat still consistent and similar would be the touring side of things, right? Like obviously getting out and touring is important. But every day, every week, you know, it's important to continue to learn. So anybody that's within the music business, reggae or not, right, it has to be, you know, it has to be something that you're conscious of and that you're doing and you're spending a lot of time on, not necessarily at a university though.
Your artist, Stick Figure, album recently, Wisdom, debuted at number one on the Billboard reggae chart, hit Bob Marley, 150, I think it was 144 week streak out the park, made history. Everyone was talking about it. Stick Figure replaced Bob Marley. Those are some of the headlines. To what do you credit the success of Stick Figure, who is, your most successful artist, right? And how do you suggest other artists, other reggae artists, because I know you represent other reggae artists, find that formula for success like that? The album sold already more than 40,000 units, according to Luminate. So what do you suggest other artists do to have that kind of success, to compete at that high level in reggae?
Well, I think understanding the barometer for what success is, first and foremost, is important. And for different artists in different situations, it's a different kind of scenario, right? And I think one of the reasons that Stick Figure is so successful is because he has consistent, cohesive content that's digestible, you know, for his fans, which strengthens his community. And I almost use the word like cult, right? Where it's like the Stick Figure community, the Stick Figure family is so supportive of everything Stick Figure does, and vice versa. Stick has been consistently feeding them content and music, and just, it's not all of a sudden, you know, this happened, you know, just like in one thing. But also one thing with them is that the barometer for success isn't necessarily, hey, let's, you know, let's try to knock off Bob Marley off this chart or anything like that. It's just, can we continue to raise the level of what we're doing without having this kind of stop and go motion, which is a lot of times with our favorite artists, we see that, you know, they'll be active and then all of a sudden they're inactive for a period of time, and then they're active again and then they're inactive, right? With Stick, it's very consistent, it's cohesive, and it's digestible for his fans. And so therefore the community is so strong. So if you're, for those of, you know, if anyone that is a part of Stick Figure, let's say their family on Facebook, every day, every morning, you go on there and there's literally hundreds of messages of people that are communicating with each other without Stick necessarily being there. It's kind of like in sports where, like, let's say I'm wearing my Warriors hat and you're wearing your Warriors hat. We don't even know each other, but we see each other and we're like, you know, we immediately have this bond, you know, together. And yes, of course, we're thinking about the game and things like that. But now we have a relationship with each other, and the community around Stick Figure, his fans and supporters, are so strong and so genuine that really is the, you know, the secret sauce, call it whatever you want. And some people may have never heard of Stick Figure. They may have never heard of any of his music or whatever. But his fan base and his community is so strong that they support him so much, and they continue to add other like-minded people into that community. And that goes beyond music. It's just people checking in on each other. How you doing? And, you know, I'm having these issues, or, hey, I need a new tire, or I have what, you know, it's literally everything that, you know, is encompassed in this community. And I think that also puts him in a position to be creatively free to just, you know, make music and not worry about anything else. Is it going to go on the radio? Is it going to be on a chart? Is it going to do anything? Is it going to, you know, impact anything other than, hey, is this something I'm happy with? And is this going to make my community happy? And he's an amazing artist, man. It's just, you know, it's that community-based thing, the consistency, you know, part of it, and the ability to continue to raise the level. And the advice that I would have, you know, for other artists is, A, what is your barometer? You know, is it to be rich? Is it to be famous? Is it to, you know, what's the barometer? And once you understand what that barometer for yourself is, if you focus in on planting your seeds in your garden, watering them, it'll take a while. You won't see it happen right away, but you'll become self-sufficient and you'll be able to be creatively free. And at that point, you'll be fulfilled whether you're on any chart or, you know, or not, especially with how like streaming is now, where you don't have to go out and sell your CD like to, you know, to new fans every day. You can have your fan base and you can have them support you just by releasing music for them. They don't have to keep buying. They can just keep listening. And so Stick's done an amazing job of that. His live show is bananas. I mean, anyone that's been to like a Stick Figure set at a festival or at a club or whatever, you know, it's amazing. And so that, I think, plays, you know, a big part of it. His merchandise, you know, is amazing. Like, he has over 300 something SKUs on his store. And he, you know, he works 24/7 on his craft. And therefore, you know, as far as his extended team, with Thomas and with Marina and everybody else, like, makes us want to work harder as well. And, you know, again, there's no like secret kind of thing or anything like that, other than just build your fan base, make sure they're strong, and focus on the things that are important.
What kind of thought process goes into you signing an artist? Like, what's the ingredient you're looking for to be like, oh, I need to sign him or her?
Right. Well, you know, we don't sign artists in the traditional sense. We're, you know, kind of based on three, our company's broken up into three main departments: our management side of things, our label side of things, and then our live side of things, right? On the management side, management is like a marriage, right? It's very intimate and, you know, it's an all encompassing process. And of course we have to be, you know, fans of the music and things like that, but personality is really the main ingredient that we're looking for. Is this somebody that we can work with? Is this somebody that we can communicate with? Are they receptive to what we're saying? Are we receptive to what they're saying? Do we have, you know, the chemistry to, in a real private setting, like, say what we really mean without like hurting anyone's feelings, and vice versa, I think is the most important kind of criteria that we look for. And the only way to really, you know, find that out is by working together, because sometimes you think you might have that and you might work with somebody for a little bit, and you realize that you don't share the same vision and you don't, you know, you're not able to communicate. And ultimately on our end, our jobs are to help bring out the artist's vision, not our vision. You know, we work for them, they don't work for us. So it's almost like, you know, can we align and understand what they want and help, you know, and help kind of bring that out? Are they reasonable with what those things are? And it's very difficult to, you know, sustain a relationship, just like a marriage, right? For a long period of time. Like a lot of marriage, like my parents, today is their 43rd anniversary. I'm like, oh my God, like that's so, you know, and sometimes it does, you know, it doesn't work out like that. And I think also having a management team, like in sports, again, you have the head coach, but then you have all these other coaches and specialists that you surround the artist with, because it's not a one person like job, right? It's very much a team oriented thing. And even looking at kind of going back to the list, it's like us being on that list, there's 20 to 30 people that, you know, are really behind what we're doing and putting us in a position to actually execute these things and, you know, making sure that we have these specialists that we're able to surround our artists with, And, you know, and help kind of propel and push and execute the visions, you know, that they have. But if they're unreasonable and if the personality doesn't match with ours or vice versa, if we don't match with, you know, with them, no matter how amazing the music is, it just, you know, it just does not work out.
Yeah, that's true. In terms of your inspiration to, like, why did you choose reggae versus any other genre? Like, what was going on in California at the time to make you be like, let's choose reggae music as the driver of our record label? Because hip-hop is a big thing in Cali. You have Latin culture there as well. Like, why did reggae resonate with you?
Well, I would say reggae chose us in that sense, because, you know, for me, I definitely came from the hip-hop side of things. And for the longest period of time, as things shifted, what happened unknowingly maybe even is that we got into a scenario to where, again, this is another saying within Ineffable, where it's mood over genre, right? Because right now, and in general, what dictates people's decision-making process is their mood. So for example, on my gym workout playlist, I have hip hop, reggae, even EDM, metal, like all kinds of, you know, mood-oriented music. And within reggae and dancehall and all the different kind of, you know, elements that come from that, you have so many different mood-oriented, like, music that, you know, that's generated. And I think that's why we gravitated towards that. And also, again, the personalities of the artists that we were working with. Kali Buds, for example, was our first big client, first artist that really, you know, believed in us and was like, all right, we'll listen to these crazy guys and kind of see what they're talking about. And, you know, shout out to Pee-wee and Dino and Kev and these guys who they put us, again, in a position to say, all right, let's see what you're talking about and try this, you know, kind of unorthodox, at least at the time, kind of strategy. And it was really built more so around mood, you know, over genre. We're competing with all genres. You know, we're competing with everybody at all times. And so I say reggae chose us because of the fact that, let's say, someone like Kali Buds, who was living in Bermuda at the time, you know, believed in us, gave us a chance. And that kind of, you know, pulled us into a little bit more. And all of a sudden, you know, years go by and we look at it and we're like, wow, okay, look, you know, we are definitely a part of this, you know, scene and culture, which goes worldwide. But at the same time, you know, again, it's a mood over genre situation. And we're very conscious of that. And we're thinking about that. So when we're pitching, let's say, you know, some Kali Buds music or Stick Figure or any of our artists, there's only three or four reggae playlists that are out there, right? So it's a very limiting, like on the DSP side, it's very limiting options. But guess what? Every workout playlist that's out there, right, should have this particular dancehall song. So when we're pitching some of our stuff, we're trying to make sure that we're extending and going and leaning into the mood over genre, so that way the reggae and the dancehall and some of the stuff gets the proper recognition that it needs. Because rarely someone sits down, especially in California or somewhere here, where they're like, I'm just going to listen to rap or hip hop. I'm just going to listen to this. No, it's more, I'm in my car with my boys, or I'm going to the gym, or, you know, what is your mood and what are you doing? That dictates what you listen to. And from reggae, you have the music that hits all moods. You know, it evokes emotion, tells stories, it's conscious, but it's also, you know, upbeat, and it fits all those criteria. And that's why for us, we were able to make that work. And you know, it definitely, looking at it now, it's like, yeah, reggae chose us. And I'm so grateful and thankful that it did, because there's a lot of work that we can do on our end to make sure that it's properly represented, you know, across the world, whether we're in California or wherever we're at, and the influence and impact that it has, you know, on so many people across the world is immense. And we definitely are doing our best to make sure that, like, everything else, you know, gets pushed forward. And sometimes we get frustrated when we see other genres, you know, again, represented in a certain way on the DSPs, they get banners and all this other stuff, right? And we have to do what we need to do on our end, you know, to push the reggae movement forward. But it chose us, man. And I'm so glad that it did. And you know, we still feel like we're just getting started. And, you know, there's a lot of work to be done.
So you started in 06, which is just on the tail end of when reggae was selling a lot. Like, Sean Paul was out of this world. You know, Shaggy had a lot of success from like 2000 to like 2004 thereabout. You started on the tail end of the market. So the music has a selling problem generally. You're the second most successful independent record label with your acts over in Cali. What do you suggest is necessary to get more reggae music on the charts? I mean, the bigger charts, the Billboard 200, Hot 100, and also the Airplay charts, because they choose one reggae song every year, fast or slow. I was told by Shawnee Culture a couple of weeks ago from Hot 97. He said they choose one reggae song, fast or slow. They don't care if it's dancehall or slow roots reggae. But how do you suggest reggae tap into that sonic lifestyle of people to get more airplay?
Well, again, I think you need to take a zoom out of that and understand the fact that, like you said, like out of all the millions of songs that are out there of all the different genres, right, there's only a few spots for those like rotation placements, right? And I think understanding the format of those placements is critical. So let's say, for example, like a place like Hawaii, right? Hawaii has the most radio support that we have for reggae almost anywhere. And shout out to Koa and these guys out there, because their format and the radio and the stuff that they play, right, the type of music that resonates with the audience that's out there, the format for that, if I try to send them, let's say, a hardcore dancehall song, that's not going to fit that format. I'm not going to send that like song to them, right? And looking at power rotation on, let's say like a Hot 97, you have to go out and do the legwork. You have to get that song moving and buzzing and popping before, we can expect them to come in and just, take that song and put it on the air. And nowadays there's more tools than ever to do so, whether it's TikTok. I know people don't want to hear that, but TikTok is such an influential platform, and people are like, oh, it's just a bunch of dancing and this and this and this. And like, it's not, right? There's these tools that are out there now that exist that give us the information that you pop open the hood to see what's underneath the hood. Like I use the joke of like, I'm from Russia. I came to America, and I remember in math class, they gave us these math books, and in the back of the book was the answers. And I'm like, what the, in the back of the book, isn't it? You guys see that? That's how it is now. You could open up, you go to your YouTube, go to the analytics, actually use this data that's there to, take music, which is subjective, right? Music is subjective, and to create a story, paint a picture around it, and actually, paint the picture for the programming directors, and not just rely on the fact that this is an amazing song. Build the fever pitch of what's happening with that song on your own to the point where they have no choice but to play that. And even if they don't play it, it's so relevant and it's almost like they have to at that point, right? But if we're just trying to go for a grand slam every time, instead of like, let's focus on each song, not every song is meant for that kind of spot. And, some songs are never going to play on the radio, but they're going to be the biggest hits when you perform them live, right? Some songs are going to be, have a certain special place for your fan, whether it's, helping them get through a rough time or whatever. And songs have a format that may fit, and at that point, go in on it, and it's not going to happen. We usually have like one or two waves of promo, and then it kind of dies down, right? It kind of starts here, and then it starts to kind of fizzle down, as opposed to the opposite of, you have to push it for 5, 6, 7 years, like a song like Kylie Budd's is Love and Reggae, which we've been pushing for 6 years now, and it's still growing every day. It's not decreasing in like popularity, it's growing in popularity, and it takes time for music to to kind of trickle down. But don't be discouraged, if it doesn't happen or doesn't get on that major like radio play, because now, there's so many other outlets that actually drive discovery for people who may have just found that song, and they will go back to the rest of your catalog and actually, become your fan. Whereas a lot of times on the radio, you hear a song, you like it, but you're not sure who it is, and you're not checking for them, and you're not really, it doesn't really have that same impact. So I think we have the ability on the reggae side to for sure, be on those charts and participate like on that top side of things. But most importantly, and more importantly, is there's these tools that allow us to make sure we're in a good position. And that song is so relevant that they have to come in and play that, right? They have to then come and take that and show data, use data, to kind of paint that picture and show that to them. And the response will be significantly more receptive. And that's the other part of like, we always talk about hit records, right? We use the word hit to mean different things. Does it mean a timeless record? Does it mean a commercially successful record, right? Like you can have a record that's a hit record in terms of it gets radio play, but is it a timeless record? Or a timeless record that never touches the radio, but you can listen to it 10 years from now, 10 years ago, and it's still going to be a hit record, right? So understanding, again, that barometer of what the end result, you know, that we're going after, and not be discouraged. You know, I expect 1,000 no's before I get a maybe, and then, you know, another 1,000 no's before I get a yes. But being consistent and, you know, trying and pushing and finding different angles, you know, to get it to the point where they have to play it. Because of, you know, because of what it's doing. And even if they don't, it's still out of here because it's a timeless record that then has commercial success.
Do you get opposition coming into the business as a white California reggae label? Do you get opposition from your other record labels who are like, oh, who are those guys trying to take some of our market share? And how do you deal with that as a business person? But more so, as a music business person?
I mean, I think you have to understand the perspectives. And I think for us, one of the reasons, of course, there's opposition and it's very indirect, right? A lot of it is very indirect, things that we see and hear, whatever. And understanding their perspective and their frustration from what they're actually saying and what they actually mean is important. And I think for us, that's something that we've tried to do because we're coming from, you know, from out of the culture into the culture, and we have to be respectful of that. And mindful of that, right? We're guests, you know, we're not, this isn't ours, right? And so we have to understand that and be respectful of that. And music defies, you know, race or color, and being able to show and prove with your work versus anything else, a lot of the opposition points are valid, right? It's like, hey, how, you know, why and how is this happening? And for us, in terms of, you know, combating that, it's being able to share information and resources, right? There's a lot of things that, let's say a Jamaican artist, for example, you know, doesn't have access to or doesn't understand in terms of how and why do I get on this playlist, or how and why do I monetize, or what royalties that are out there, and being able to share, you know, that information and those resources to put them in a financial position to be successful and make their own decisions, right? You can talk to us, work with us, and then make your own, you know, decision versus just the initial kind of like, wait a minute, stick figure. Like, why, you know, how come he's, you know, doing this and this? And if you want to know how come, I'll tell you, you know, here's how come, right? And I think, again, on stage, on the live side, right, there's this moment where you either win the crowd over or you don't. And that's not something that we're doing, right? It's not us that are up there performing and doing those things. It's the artists and the music. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, things are able to move forward. And a big thing for us is collaborating, right? And making sure that you know, we're bringing this music together from all over the world. We're getting Hawaiian artists. We're getting artists from Europe. We're getting artists from Africa. We're getting artists from Jamaica, from Caribbean, everywhere to make music together. Because once that's happening, a lot of the things that, you know, potentially are the initial kind of things that would pop up as opposition in someone's mind are broken down, and it creates unity versus, you know, division. And, you know, again, we don't take it to heart. And I think that, again, it creates it creates an opportunity for conversation. It would be worse if things weren't said and thought, right? If people were like, whoa, Soja, how come Soja this and this, right? Cool, say it. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about how come, right? And I think on the live performance circuit, which is a small circuit, you see how you can take artists from all over the world, regardless of what they look like, and the success that it has when we're working together on something, right? Everybody brings their crowd, et cetera, and everybody cross-pollinates on, like, wow, like when Chronix performed at Cali Roots, watching the crowd, like, it was, you know, I was watching the crowd more than the Chronix, because I'm like, their minds were just blown by what they were seeing. And, you know, the Cali Roots Festival is a good example of that, where they don't necessarily have to do that. They don't have to, you know, bring these artists from different parts of the world. But it's super important for us that we are doing that, that we are exposing, you know, these kind of different musical kind of elements to
Cali Roots. I was going to get to, but Cali Roots is your festival, right?
Cali Roots is not our festival. We're part of the festival. But again, there's the, you know, Dan Sheehan and his team, you know, it's their festival, and it's grown so much over the years, and it's created a platform and an outlet for a lot of these things that we're talking about. And what we've done, I think this was 2020, we launched and put out what we call Cali Roots Rhythm, where, you know, again, we took a lot of the artists that were on the bill and even ones that weren't on the bill, had them, you know, Cali Buds produce the rhythm, had everybody do, you know, a song on it. And the idea there was, you know, like half the comments initially were like, why is everybody on the same beat, right? Because they don't even understand what a rhythm is, like the Cali Roots crowd, a lot of them. But if you're going to be a part of this, it's important that you learn and understand the culture. And sometimes it's intimidating for that to happen. And this is a way for that to happen in a natural way that, again, brings people together and, you know, through the music, right? And gives everybody a chance and a platform, you know, to kind of showcase what that is. It was extremely successful. You know, we did a second one, we have a third one coming up. And things like that are the fun parts, you know, of the job, and seeing how successful that is, you know, the like direct result of working together and being unified versus, you know, kind of being divided.
There's a thing that Adam told me about called At Venue, which you can scan that and it goes straight to the Billboard charts, right? Tell the audience about At Venue. What is it? And how do you use it to benefit your artists and how other artists can use it?
Yeah, so At Venue is a perfect example of just one thing that, you know, one tool of many tools that exist today that make it possible to record, you know, the things that you're doing. So for example, what At Venue does is it tracks your merchandise sales and your CD and music sales, and specifically for music sales, it reports those sales directly to Billboard. So when you're doing a show or a tour, you know, you put the number of shirts you have, that, you know, put everything in there. So that way at the end of the night, when you count out, you can see exactly what you sold, how many of what, and, you know, kind of keep track of that. But on the music side specifically, it sends that information for inclusion within the Billboard kind of chart. So if you did a show and you sold 10 CDs, or 10 vinyl or whatever, and then you have 30 shows that you just did, that's a significant amount of sales that is not getting reported. So a lot of the stuff on the Billboard charts, right, there's rules, just like anything else, that you have to follow in order to even be considered on those charts. And At Venue helps, at least on the tracking side, to make sure that, you know what you're selling. It's not just about recording it for the charts. It's really more so for merchandise to know, hey, I'm out of large, you know, Blind to You shirts or whatever. Or wow, I didn't realize my light blue, you know, shirts are the best sellers. But it records and tracks for Billboard on the music side of things. And if you're not doing that, then you're missing out, and you're touring, you're missing out on a big chunk, you know, of reporting for Billboard. So if that's something that's important to you, then, you know, it's one tool that is out there that exists that you should be utilizing. And there's a lot of sales that are disqualified altogether from inclusion in the Billboard charts for a variety of different reasons.
So to be clear, if an artist has a concert and 10,000 people come to the concert, and they, at the gate, sell CDs to those 10,000 people, they could clock 10,000 albums sold to Billboard using At Venue.
Correct. That is exactly right. Which is, again, is an important, you know, tool to use if that's something that, you know, that you're trying to go after. But it's also more important for your internal data to understand what you're selling, how much of it, where, how much per those 10,000 people, you know, again, you sold those 10,000 CDs, but how much per head are you making on merchandise, right? Is it $8, $10, $20? You know what to order in the future. You use this data to help better understand how to run your business, you know, and like in sports, again, you have all these analytics where they give you all this stuff. If you're not using that information, it's kind of crazy, right? You can't only rely on that info, but if you're not using it at all, then, you know, I'd say that's more important and more powerful than the reporting like aspect of it to, you know, to Billboard, because maybe you're not selling 10,000 CDs, right? But then you have to look at why and where and how. And that is much more important for a sustainable career. And on our end internally, as far as, you know, just in FOM within the reggae scene, we need to focus more on sustainable business model versus hype, right? Versus boom, I'm on the chart or I'm here. Like, that is important, and that's what gets attention. But does it build your fan base? Does it strengthen your business? Does it help you, you know, be in a position to where you're continuing to grow financially, because that will ultimately, you know, translate into your freedom creatively. And I think that's a really important thing for us, is just having a sustainable business model, like for our artists that we're working with and working for, and making sure that they're in a position to, you know, financially be, you know, successful. Because we have kids and families, and those are the ones that sacrifice the most for us to be able to do this. And at the end of the day, we have to be able to provide for them accordingly.
In terms of projects coming out, what and who will Ineffable be releasing in throughout this year?
Well, I'm definitely excited about the Collie Buds album. You know, he's one of the main clients that I work on, and his music to me, you know, I feel like I'm his biggest fan. You know, so I'm really excited about that. We just dropped the single Take It Easy. We shot a music video when we were out in Hawaii. And he's one of the, you know, to me, one of the generational artists that we are lucky to work with, because he really bridges that gap, and his music transcends, you know, everything. So definitely, you know, really excited about that. Jay Boog is another artist who, you know, hopefully we have an album coming out with this year. You know, we have, I mean, I don't know if Stick's going to come out with another album or not. You know, every year he's been rocking with it. On the main, you know, on the management side, on the label side, I'm sure Adam's got a whole bunch of, you know, really great projects lined up. The Cali Roots Rhythm, the third rendition of the Cali Roots Rhythm is definitely something I'm excited about, just because, you know, it goes back to what we were talking about, just the pure collaboration of, you know, of different artists and the live versions of those that we start seeing at the festivals, and, you know, and on tours. And a lot of times we're seeing, let's say, some of the same artists out there that are touring. And some of the people are like, why is it the same artist, right? But by making music together, right, you're opening the door now to potentially tour together. And I think we've seen that from, you know, from the Cali Roots Rhythm, where now you have these tour packages that are based on that, you know, that song, people bringing each other up. And as a fan, like outside of the music business, as a fan, that's the most kind of exciting. It's like in wrestling back in the day when all your favorite wrestlers came out together, you're like, oh, shit, this is crazy. But, you know, a lot of really cool projects, and a lot of these projects take a long time to, you know, to kind of put together and release. And we're really lucky to participate and have the trust from the artist to, you know, to have the creative side happening while also introducing them to some of these, you know, new music business, call them strategies or whatever, that, you know, we can utilize to make sure that it's having the proper impact, you know, that it needs to.
Adam brought to the attention an issue with artists getting visas because the fee is supposed to be increased shortly. Is this affecting your roster of artists? Because I know you work with Jamaican artists and artists from outside of the U.S. How is that potentially going to affect your touring schedule and your releases? And what are you doing as an American with a voice on behalf of your company to either reverse this or lobby for a better system in place for artists to come in and perform in America?
Yeah, I mean, it for sure has an impact, right? Because first and foremost, just even the fact that a lot of these artists are traveling from afar, let alone the visa, right? Their expenses are so much higher. It makes it so much more difficult for them to break even, let alone make money. You go on the road for a month, you come back losing money. It's a hard kind of pill to swallow. And I think that, you know, it's, in my opinion, not fair, but the rules of the game are the rules of the game. And what we're doing is we're trying to make sure that we're applying as far in advance as possible, right? That we're putting ourselves in a position to where we're doing the things, you know, it's not cool or fun or sexy. It's terrible and it's boring and it's confusing, like, to understand, you know, what needs to happen. But you have to give yourself as much time as possible, you know, to do those things, right? We're incorporating the ability to try to sponsor certain artists if they need a company that says, hey, like, this is a legitimate business thing that this person is doing. Here's their tour dates. Here's where we're going to be at. Here's who I am. Here's my credentials. And, like, you know, to try to give them an opportunity for them to, you know, to be taken more seriously. And also, just as much as it is a burden on them, on our end, making sure that the artists understand that it's their responsibility to make sure that they're doing what they need to do to fill their forms out, to get what they need, to get the money in for that. Maybe instead of spending money on, you know, let's say a certain marketing thing or a certain, you know, kind of other, let's say, expense. We incorporate some money towards the, you know, towards the tour support. It makes it a lot harder. It makes it just, you know, financially less feasible for a lot of these artists to come out and tour. But also, again, it's a big world, and the U.S. is just one market that exists, you know, for us and for them. And we need to try to be in a position to where we can cover that fee. We can fill out these forms. If you're not going to do it, find somebody on your team that's going to do it. And unfortunately, a lot of times the reality is that things are done late. They're not following, you know, certain instructions, certain rules. So in addition to the like significantly higher obstacles that are there, we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot by not doing it. You know, if you know your visa is going to expire in 2 years, start working on it now, right? And start making sure that if you're not understanding what's happening, because again, for me, it's one of the more frustrating things because of how confusing they make it of what you need to do and why did I get accepted and why not. And outside of the US, even traveling to Europe, where you have such a much bigger market, like let's say for reggae, on the touring side of things, you know, you have different countries that have different visas and different rules that you have to have, and trying to understand those things and navigate those things, but not letting that be the barrier that prevents you from entering, you know, for festivals. And it's not just new artists, it's established artists that are headlining festivals that are having these problems and issues. And what we're doing is just trying to provide as much information and help, you know, to try to not let that be the reason why, you know, this isn't happening. Like the video, the one video that Adam made about, you know, the moment it happened, we need to be the ones talking about it, right? And saying, hey, why is this, you know, why is this happening? And it might be a small ripple, right? It's not going to, you know, I can't call the, you know, whomever, the president or the governor.
And you're like the first record label, by the way, to ever address that issue. And this is not a new issue. This has been an issue. You're the first record label to ever. So I must give you credit for that. I appreciate that,
but I don't think we're the first. Because, you know, again, like going back to VP Records, for example, I know that they have, you know, spent significant amount of money on, you know, paying for visas.
No, I mean publicly. A record label has never publicly come out to say, hey, this is an unfair reality for artists overseas to come here. Like, I've never seen that in my years of working in the business.
Absolutely. We feel there's definitely some, you know, some responsibility there, you know, to do that, because again, it's something that is a reality that, you know, we're seeing is, you know, the seeing is happening all the time. And now it's even more expensive, right? It's like, to most
and not
people,
just the expense, right? There are a lot of artists who just don't have visas.
Yeah.
And like, can't even those who can afford it, like they just can't come. The biggest superstars, and it does affect how the music is translated elsewhere, you know? So to see you do that, it was a commendable thing. And I did a story on it with the research of what it is. And I put Adam's video in it.
Absolutely. And as a reminder, too, on that same note, just to kind of counterbalance it, is that 95% of our fans will never come to a show anyways, in general, because of logistical reasons, financial reasons, right? So it's not just the artist that, you know, that's an issue for, but you have, you know, a very small portion of fans that come to shows in any market. And just like in sports, I'm a huge sports fan. I don't know the last time I went to the game was, right? Because it's just a different experience. And some people go all the time, right? And those people like make that a part of their lifestyle. They're there on the show side, on the concert side. There are certain people that just go to shows all the time. They can afford it. It's, you know, who could pay $45, $40, $30 plus getting there and drinks and this and this. And the thing is we spend a lot of time servicing those fans when the reality is that the much bigger portion of our fans are never going to make it to a show. So we need to spend just as much time on servicing those folks, whether it's continuing to release music, whether it's performing and you know, broadcasting. And that was one of the things during COVID, to where obviously you saw a lot of the live stuff happening on, you know, digital wise. And, you know, there's a way to still, you know, tour properly and make smart decisions as like an investment, but also not neglect the bigger, you know, the 95% of your actual fan base that's out there. So some of these artists who don't have visas and can't come to the US have huge fan bases here. you know, and we support them. We listen to them. We want to buy merchandise, but they don't have any, right? Or we want to, you know, participate and be a part of their, you know, communities, but there isn't an infrastructure set up for that, right? So just as we're trying to make sure that on the visa side and we're coming in and have the ability to do that, we're encouraging them to make sure that they're handling those portions of their, and, you know, the focus on those portions of their kind of music business so that we as fans have access. And, you know, like Protégé is a perfect example where it's like, man, he's doing pop-up shops and, you know, he's got cool ass merch and, like, you know, he's really traversing the world and, you know, and building his fan base and things of that nature. And I think that's an extremely important part that we need to focus on with touring. We have so much, you know, 7 months from now, we know where we're going to tour. We know what time we're going to load in. We know, like, every single, like, part of it. But on the music side and on the, like, content side, it's kind of a wild, wild west, right? It kind of fits in wherever we can. And we need to give that same kind of structure to that part of it. So that way it, you know, it helps alleviate some of these issues on the visa and on the touring side of things.
My last question to you is, this is a hard question, by the way, give me your top five favorite artists of all time.
My personal ones?
Personal.
All right. In order or just in, you know, all right. In no particular order. Okay. Tupac, you know, cause for me, I learned to speak English, listening to Tupac's Greatest Hits cassette number 2. That's all I had.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I was just listening. That's for my brother. I have an older brother and he, you know, we had a little yellow Walkman and, you know, just listened to it over and over again. It was just like, you know, he's probably my favorite artist. Collie Buds, you know, I'm putting him up there just cause again, it's like, you know, I feel it's like if you, you know, could work with your favorite artist on a regular basis, he is that. And I feel like his best music is yet to be made. I'm a huge fan. I'm going to lump these guys kind of all together of like the Snoop, Dre, Dog Pound, kind of like West Coast.
West Side.
Yeah, you know, that kind of takes up a lot of them, you know. And of course, Bob, you know, is up there. But I mean, I also go through phases of like, you know, I'll listen to something over and over and over and over again for so long, and then I'll chill on it for a while. Like I've been probably listening to, you know, to like Tupac's music in, you know, a couple of weeks. And then all of a sudden I'll just be like, man, I'll put something on, you know, something on repeat. And from my personal experience on as a fan, a lot of my business kind of thought process comes from that, right? Where I wish my favorite artists would go back and make music videos for some of their biggest songs that they don't have music videos for, right? And so I try to go to my artist. I'm like, yo, let's do a video for Blind Tune. He's like, nah, it's old. I'm over it. And I'm like, I know you're over it, but as a fan, I want that, right? And, you know, kind of applying just these questions like that, like who's your top five and things like that, applying those thought processes from a fan's perspective is really something that we do all the time to, you know, apply on you know, on the business side. I've been listening to a lot of Afrobeats music and, you know, just a lot of, like, I love the Gypsy Kings, right? To me, I would put them up there where it's like completely different. I don't know what word they're saying, but like, it's like, it just changes the mood immediately when you put on, you know, some of their songs, you know, and the discovery of a newer artist, like there's these guys from the Solomon Islands called DMP. And, you know, again, like, their music to me is just out of this world. It's amazing. Never met them. You know, we put out their last record. We found, you know, we linked to them via the internet. And just the ability to discover some of these artists that have, you know, never been discovered by anybody else, but being able to work with them and kind of get that music out there. And also, you know, like my biggest A&Rs are my kids, right? I'll play something for them and they don't know, you know, they'll tell you straight away. I mean, they'll just either be rocking with it or like, nah, you know, next, dad. And you know, it's
how could an artist submit a record for you to distribute or put out on your label?
I mean, you just hit the contact on our site and we read and go through every single thing. And we're very realistic, with folks about the fact that one of our biggest fears is overextending ourselves and putting ourselves in a position to where we're not able to properly service the things that we're working on because of the fact that we want to work on so many different things. But at the same time, if we can't necessarily do that, the tools and the resources that we use are available for these same, you know, folks. So if you're an artist and you want to, you know, submit music to us, just send, you know, go to our site, hit the contact us, send it, you know, comes right to us. We review it, we go over it, be consistent. You know, obviously it takes some time to respond and whatnot, but we go through everything and we're always, you know, we're always sorting through stuff and looking through things. We can't necessarily take on as much as we want. We're slowly growing and trying to not overextend ourselves, trying to, you know, come through and deliver for the things that, you know, that we're working on, but gladly we'll also share the resources and the tools that you need to be able to do the things that we're talking about, the things that we're doing. It's a big, you know, it's a big ocean out here.
I love it, my brother. Thank you so much, Igor Katz.
Of course, man. Thank you guys. Appreciate you guys for creating that outlet and supporting and, you know, and doing what you guys are doing. It's necessary. There's really almost, I mean, there's nobody else that, very few others that, you know, that are doing that. So we see that and we get excited about it. So please keep it up and, you know, and thank you guys for, you know, for shining some light.